before we get to what he brings. However that investigation plays out, the Raptors are free and clear with Patrick McCaw right now.
By all accounts, that's my understanding. I mean, from the folks I've talked to, nobody's indicated that they could be in any sort of jeopardy because, you know, they're simply just signing a guy that was available to be signed. It was no longer a member of the Warriors or Cavaliers. So to my knowledge and anybody I've talked to, Jeff, the Raptors have done no wrong here. I would imagine, I got to think it would be relatively unprecedented for the NBA to nullify a Raptor signing and force a player to go back to Cleveland if, technically speaking, based on the rules as they exist, the Cavaliers didn't do anything wrong. Now, did they do something shady? Is there some collusion behind the scenes with Patrick McCaw or with McCaw's agent? I suppose that's what the investigation will either find or not find. But as far as the Raptors are concerned, this is just a guy that's available that they've signed to a you know, league minimum deal type thing for the remainder of the season, and there's no wrongdoing in a sense on their part.
All right, what does he bring to this team? Because it seems to me that his skill set, that it kind of replicates what this team already has, and I'm not certain if he's necessarily the answer to whatever three-point woes the Raptors have.
No, you're right about that. I mean, he's a career 30% three-point shooter, albeit a career that's only 2 years old. Shot 33% in his rookie season, shot under 24% last year in his second season, so his career average is 29.5. To me, he's an interesting prospect. If it's even fair to call, you know, a two-time champion and a prospect, a guy that Golden State certainly had, you know, a lot of faith in and a lot of hopes for. You know, this is a guy that I think was probably considered a major part of their future. When you think about the Warriors losing Nick Young, they have an aging Sean Livingston, an aging Andre Iguodala. So as great as the core is, when you're thinking about those second tier guys or those bench players, to have a 6'7", 6'8" guy at the wing who could play the wing, who could play the guard, who can guard multiple positions, I think McCaw was a guy that was certainly a part of their future. And you know, following his scary injury last year, and folks might remember, Jeff, the collision with Vince Carter when you know, last season, I believe it was March 31st last year, when McCaw goes to the floor and falls to the floor hard on his back, and he laid motionless for a long time before being carted off the floor, had numbness in his limbs, didn't come back until the Western Conference Finals, but Golden State still went and offered him, you know, the $5.2 million contract at the end of that offer in the offseason, to which McCaw turned that down, wanted more money, wanted more security, and ultimately held out. So this is a guy that Golden State still wanted, but they didn't want him bad enough to match the Cavaliers' offer because of the tax implications. So it's kind of a quite the saga of how we got here today, because McCaw now is still a restricted free agent. Now he'll be the Raptors' restricted free agent, but he's making substantially less money than what he would have had he signed for the $5.2 million deal in the summertime from Golden State. And in all likelihood, and I'm guessing here, but probably would have had an opportunity for more playing time with the Warriors too. So now he comes to Toronto, and to go back to your original point, he's behind a lot of guys on the depth chart, and he's the new face in town, which is always tough to kind of crack through into a rotation as well. I think long-term he could help, because it also helps you potentially look at other moves.
Right.
Because now, are you willing to trade, and I, you know how much I hate playing the rumor game and throwing out names, but are you willing to trade another wing or potentially another guard because you have extra depth on your roster now in a guy like Patrick McCaw? And I think it makes things that much more interesting with the deadline now less than a month away.
Well, absolutely. And I think what it also does, you know, in addition to that, there may be an impact next year as well, depending on how things shake out with this team. But
sure.
I mean, you're right. It you know, considering how much energy has gone into this year, you know, if you make a Kawhi Leonard deal, if you make the deal that the Raptors made, you aren't all of a sudden going to be cautious at the trade deadline. That to me makes no sense. And I think what Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri have done here, further to your point, is they have an option now that allows them to do something that they might have thought was undoable 2 or 3 weeks ago. So maybe you bring in the 3-point shooter that you need, or the other wing player that you need. I think a 3-point shooter is what we'd be talking about. And, you know, I'm not saying you're going to move Pascal Siakam, but I don't know if, depending on how good the player is, depending on whether or not you get a guy with term left, maybe you look at moving an OG Anunoby or somebody like that.
Well, there's a couple of things I think at play, and everything you're saying, it makes 100% sense. You know, if we go back to, you know, 24 hours ago, let alone 48 hours ago, if you were to ask me what are the two biggest needs or what are the biggest needs on the team, I'd say there's two. You'd like another big man to have some front court depth, and you'd certainly like another shooter, a 3-point shooter. And I don't know that Patrick McCoff fills either one of those voids. He's certainly not a big man. And obviously, as I say, as a career 30% 3-point shooter, with his best season being his rookie campaign at 33%, you're not exactly going out and getting a sharp shooter. You might be getting a guy that you think can improve from three, and with his length and his athleticism can develop into being a shooter, but I don't know that if boom, suddenly you pop him into this lineup and he's the solution to all of your perimeter issues in terms of shooting. So you still have those needs. They have one more roster spot. It's still currently filled by Chris Boucher, but as a two-way player, and for folks that don't know, it's essentially a two-way player that can kind of go G League to the NBA back and forth. You only can have 45 days at the NBA level before the team that either has to send you back to the G League for good or guarantee your deal and keep you with the big club for the remainder of the season. So they're going to have a time ticking relatively soon on Boucher in terms of what they want to do with him, or do they ultimately say, no, you're going to be in the G League, you're going to develop for the remainder of the season, we free up that roster spot, we go find the shooter or the big man from free agency on a 10-day contract, whatever it may be, or in a trade, in obviously one of those scenarios where they're maybe taking back more than they're giving up in terms of a 2-for-1, 3-for-2 type deal. But your other earlier point, Jeff, and again, I don't disagree with you, but I think the Raptors are in a little bit of a quandary. They go out and they get Kawhi Leonard, so they certainly push their chips all in for this season, and they've got the top record in the NBA, or one of the top records in the NBA. They're having a hell of a season. But at the same time, there's been no indication yet, pro-con or otherwise, if Kawhi's going to stay or go. And as much as you have to prepare or hope for him staying, you have to prepare for the possibility of him going. So a trade right now for the Raptors, they're not moving Kyle Lowry. They're not moving Kawhi Leonard. I can't imagine they're moving Danny Green. I don't even think they'd be looking to be moving Serge Ibaka at this point, depending on what the trade is. So who would other teams want from the Raptors roster? Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright, maybe Norm Powell. That's your young core. Yeah. Or your young pieces that need to take you into the next generation or into the future years if Kawhi Leonard leaves, and going into next year, you're entering into the final year of a Kyle Lowry and a Serge Ibaka. So you can't completely empty out your cupboard knowing that your cupboard might be dwindled if Kawhi Leonard leaves. But at the same time, if you've gone all in with Kawhi Leonard, how do you not try to really go all in and go out and make that big splash trade, even at the risk of potentially losing some of those young assets? It's a quandary right now, I think, for Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri.
So we found out yesterday that Jonas Valanciunas will have the splint on for another month. I did notice him the game against Atlanta. I did notice him on the court shooting before the game. Is that a surprise? You know, this extra length of time we're taking, or is that sort of what the Raptors originally indicated to you guys, you know, that would be the timeline, that we'd be looking at what, maybe a week before the All-Star game for him back?
I think initially if I'm not mistaken, it was initially speculated or mentioned that it would be likely about 6 weeks, and now it sounds like it's going to be more like eight plus. Mm-hmm. When I saw him in Orlando, right before the new year, that was the day that he told me that he had the stitches out and that he was yanking out the stitches himself with the trainers. And I said to him, I'm like, oh, that's got to be good news. Maybe a couple weeks away. And he said to me at that point, probably a month. So again, that game was the 28th, I believe, of December. So even just based on Jonas at the time telling me probably more like a month, 4 weeks, that would put him right at the end of January, about a week, week and a half before the trade deadline, and as you say, kind of more like 2 weeks before the All-Star game. So it's a little longer than anticipated, But at the same time, there's part of me that wonders, you know, when teams put on the timeline and they say 4 weeks, it ends up being six. Well, hey, maybe they say a month and he ends up being back in 3 weeks. You know, better to overestimate than to underestimate.
Absolutely.
And to kind of maybe, you know, stop and quell the questions from the fans, from the media, from everybody else. So, you know, I think the Raptors are probably taking a cautious approach too, saying as much as they'd love him back in the lineup, they're getting decent minutes right now from Greg Monroe, and maybe this could benefit Valanciunas in the long run if he's, you know, gets a little bit more rest and you're certain that he comes back, not at 90% or 95%, he's 100%, there's no issues at all. As you say, he's working out, he's still able to train and run and keep his fitness up. I think, you know, kind of being cautious at this point is probably the more prudent path for the Raptors.
So we talked to Jonesy a couple of days ago, and we're just past the halfway point with this team right now, going into the game against the Nets. What have you learned about this team, Eric, in the first half that maybe surprises you? You know, when you sit back and look at it, that makes you think, that's a little, you know, that's a little farther along than I thought it would be. Or conversely, maybe, you know, I expected to see a little more. I mean, Jonesy mentioned defensive consistency as being one of the things, although, you know, I think he was very quick to say, as indeed everybody's been quick to say, Eric, that you have to couch everything by acknowledging that this team has not been 100% healthy, I don't think, too often this year. I mean, I believe Nick Nurse has used 12 or 13 different lineups so far this year.
Yeah, it's 14 different starting lineups, which is crazy to think, you know, that the Raptors have been able to not just stay afloat, but stay amongst the best of the best. I think what maybe stands out for me is that when you've only had 22 games now with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry in the lab together, you've played half the year without the two of them together. It's even crazier for me to think that of all the injuries, there's never been a game yet, Jeff, where one or the other hasn't played. The Raptors have never gotten into a game with both out. Mm-hmm. So they've always had one of their two stars, but only 22 games with the two of them together. And that's why whether it's Jonesy talking about defensive consistency or anything else I might say to you, I think it's kind of to be determined. You know, you've played half the year without your two guys in the lineup together. How good can you be? How much might you struggle? I think we've seen, as fantastic, as incredible as Kawhi Leonard is on both ends of the floor, and certainly defensively, look at just even the plays he made in crunch time the other night, I think the ball at times, and listen, I don't say this in a critical way because the guy's unbelievable, going up giving you 20, 25, 30-plus every night, but the ball can stick at times because he's a hell of a one-on-one player, and he can create, and he can create his own shot, he can create for others, but I don't know that there's as much flow offensively, whereas when Lowry's in and Leonard's out, there's more ball movement, and there's more guys scoring. It's not just Kyle doing everything. And I think that's where you need to get the two of them on the floor together to make sure that they've had enough time under their belts by the time the playoffs roll around. And then you have the familiarity and the comfort of everybody on the floor with them together. That, to me, maybe is what stands out at this point. And you're saying that about a 31-win team that is having a hell of a season. I still want to see a little bit more. I think what I'm also wanting to see is early in the year, I think we saw more of either a killer instinct or more of an ability to put teams away. Whereas I think at times, even against, you know, Atlanta the other night, I see the Raptors kind of scuffle from time to time where I don't know if it's that they're just waiting to kind of push that button and turn it on. I think we could see this team play at a higher level a little more often or for longer stretches. And I think that's something that Nick Nurse always talks about is, you know, knowing and accepting you're not going to get that cliched 48-minute effort every single night. But can I turn the 20 minutes into 25? Can I turn 25 into 28, 30, and get longer stretches of consistent, dialed-in, committed play on both ends? And I think that's what you ultimately want from a team. If you're talking about being a championship team, you want those extended runs of consistent, dialed-in play on both ends.
The Bucks are the team that scares you the most in this conference?
Yes. Right now, yes. I mean, at the beginning of the year, I would have said Boston. Not that Boston doesn't scare me, but right now, with the way they move the ball, with the way they shoot the ball, especially from the perimeter, with the length that they have, and obviously with Antetokounmpo, 100% Milwaukee's, to me, the team that should scare folks the most.